There once was a ship that put to sea, and the name of the ship was the Billy O.T. The winds blew harder, bowed it down below.
Oh my gosh, what is it about shipwrecks that sparks our interest? You know, most people just love to learn about them. And if you are one of them, we want to tell you about a great event that's coming up called Ghost Ships Festival in Manitowoc. It's at the end of the month. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is The Larry Mueller Show. And here to talk about the event and Great Lakes shipwrecks in general are Kevin Cullen, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And with Kevin is Brendan Baylud. He's the president of the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association. Hi, Brendan.
Good to be here.
What questions do you have about shipwrecks? Well, give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Guys, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Brendan, tell us about the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association, and I have to admit that I didn't know there was one, so I apologize.
That's all right. We're an organization that is about 35 years old. We were started right around the time that the state of Wisconsin started their maritime archaeology program. Big event happened in 1987. A federal law gave ownership of all shipwrecks in the Great Lakes to the states and provinces, essentially protecting them from illegal salvage. There had been laws on the books before that, but really was in 1987 that the whole landscape changed. And so the states started either underwater sanctuaries for shipwrecks, or in our case, we started a maritime archaeology program, and the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association was started as their auxiliary volunteer group to help document shipwrecks. And so we've continued to grow and to expand. Now our emphasis is on a lot of remote sensing using sonar and remote operated vehicles to help the public participate in underwater archaeology and in documenting shipwrecks. So we've got about 150 members from all over the state, and we have regular projects where we take people out on the water to investigate, in some cases, newly discovered shipwrecks with us.
That's pretty exciting stuff. Kevin, why don't you tell us about the Wisconsin Maritime Museum? I've been there a couple of times. Really nice museum. What's the behind the making of that museum?
Right. Well, you know, we started off as the Manitowoc Maritime Museum back in 1970, and that really was a kind of a smaller museum, really, you know, heralding the shipbuilding tradition of Manitowoc, and in particular was the World War II effort. And so that's why USS Cobia, the submarine, was actually brought here from Milwaukee, but it was built in Groton, Connecticut. And today it's still here outside in the river. And it's one of the most intact World War II submarines that you can see anywhere in the world, Gato class. So really it grew from a submariner's memorial to a regional maritime museum. And now it's, I would say, a world class, one of the largest maritime museums on the Great Lakes. So lots of exhibits, an incredible archive, and just a tremendous place to come to work every day.
I'll bet. It's a lot more extensive than I thought it was going to be when I first went. I was like, oh, this will take, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes. Like, yeah, no. So let's talk about this Ghost Ships Festival. And this sounds like a great time, too. Brendan, your organization's, of course, your organization is co-sponsoring it, and it's going to be in Manitowoc. What are people going to see when they go?
Well, the Ghost Ships Festival actually was started in 2000 in Milwaukee. This is the 19th Ghost Ships Festival. It used to be much larger. We used to get 1,000 people at it when it was in Milwaukee, but we had to move because of costs, really. But what we do is we bring together people who work to locate historic shipwrecks around the Great Lakes, people who tell the stories of historic shipwrecks, who document these new sites as they're discovered, and people who tell stories about the community history associated with these wrecks. And we have a slate of speakers, essentially, throughout the day. Some are noted authors. We'll have the noted regional author Fred Stonehouse is coming to sign his 50th anniversary book about the loss of the Edmund Fitzgerald, for example. But we will also be featuring a revealing of a new discovery of a major ship that was still missing on Lake Superior. one of the largest ships still missing on the Great Lakes has been found, and it will be unveiled at the Ghost Ships Festival as part of our keynote speaker. We'll also have other things. We have a lot of sponsors and vendors, people selling everything from books to scuba diving equipment, people with displays about remote sensing technology like remote operated vehicles, side scanning sonars. We'll actually have our own remote operated vehicles in the swimming pool, and we'll have a station where the public can pilot our remote operated vehicles around a virtual shipwreck and learn how to use a remote operated vehicle in the hotel pool. We have many other things. We have an authors table where we'll have notable authors doing book signings throughout the event. We'll have a virtual reality cave where people can wear an Oculus 3D VR headset and literally walk down the deck of a historic schooner in 260 feet of water off Wisconsin's coast in real 3D. So just all sorts of opportunities. We'll have merchandise for sale. We'll have people can go and tour the Wisconsin Maritime Museum because it's right next door. A lot of opportunities for people that are interested in maritime history, scuba diving, underwater archaeology, and remote sensing.
What are the dates? Because I know people are probably thinking, come on, give us the dates.
Sure. It's going to be Friday, February 28th and Saturday, March 1st. Friday's show is free to the public. It's sponsored by the Wisconsin Shipwreck Coast National Marine Sanctuary, which is our new federally designated NOAA National Marine Sanctuary here in Wisconsin. And they are sponsoring, like I say, the Friday night show. So, you know, it's free to come in to the shows. And then Saturday, admission is $25 for the main show. We'll be having box lunches brought in with food trucks. So you don't have to go and leave if you don't want to. We have the hotel bar, the shipwreck or the ghost ship's pub, which will be open to festival attendees. We have special ghost ship's glasses, and if you buy one, you get money off your drinks. So
it is
family. a lot of cool stuff for young people to see with the technology and the shipwrecks.
So you're going to be offering grog and rum, right? Is that what you're?
At the Sub Pub Bar, I think they named it the Ghost Ships Pub on Maritime Bay because of this festival. They actually named the pub after this festival, so that's pretty cool.
They did.
Well, that's pretty cool. So, Kevin, the museum is hosting the welcoming reception. What are any of the, do you have special exhibit going on that people will want to check out?
Yeah, certainly, especially associated with the Ghost Ships Festival. There's a relatively new exhibit we opened just last spring, and it's Wisconsin Shipwreck Coasts exhibit. It's over 3,000 square feet and features numerous shipwrecks within Wisconsin waters, but really focusing on the National Marine Sanctuary, Wisconsin Shipwreck Coast. So that's really between Port Washington and Two Rivers. And within that span of water, about 100,000 square miles, is close to about 100 shipwrecks, 40 of them known. And within that space, we have really just incredible artifacts that were brought up in the years before the salvage law, as Brendan mentioned, in 1987, by area divers with the intention of starting their own museum. Some of them did, and they kind of folded, and it's hard to run a museum, as I can attest. But, you know, having a facility like the Wisconsin Maritime Museum and our relationship with NOAA and the Wisconsin Historical Society and with WUAA, this is a really wonderful period in time, I think, when we're realizing that, you know, we have facilities that can care for these objects. We have huge amount of scholars that are actually studying this material. And now for us to give it to the public in a space that they can learn about these objects, about the stories of these ships, who were on them, where they were going, and our role in American history and ultimately the building of the Midwest and the Upper Great Lakes. And so this is a really great exhibit that is I think going to make some people really realize that we have a special thing here in Wisconsin when it comes to maritime heritage.
Definitely. Now, this exhibit, I'm assuming, is going to go on longer than the festival.
Yes. Yeah. So it's, you know, we intend to keep it as a semi-permanent exhibit, but keep updating new shipwreck stories, new artifacts that we can rotate in and out. The museum recently received a collection of over 10,000 shipwreck artifacts. that we're caring for on behalf of the state of Wisconsin and in consultation with Wisconsin Historical Society. So, you know, with over 10,000 objects, we can only put out a few hundred at a time, and we would like to be able to take them off exhibit. So this, it's intended to be an adaptive space over the years to come. And really with these partnerships and new discoveries, add new content into that exhibit.
Now, Brendan, is with these new laws, does that mean that we're never going to be bringing up another artifact from these wrecks?
Well, not necessarily, but I would say that we've found that the best place for a lot of these artifacts to remain is in the water. There's been a lot of experience with bringing up, we brought up a whole ship in 1969, the Alvin Clark out of Green Bay. It was put on display in Marinette, but it takes so much money to preserve a ship like that, especially because the metal starts to crack, the wood starts to rot. The Alvin Clark was eventually bulldozed and hauled away to a landfill. And so we've learned from hard experience that these artifacts underwater have a shelf life of hundreds of years. Brought to the surface, they have a shelf life of 20, 30 years. So there is a pathway to recovering artifacts, but it requires the approval of the State Historical Society's State Historic Preservation Officer, the underwater archaeologist. There has to be a conservation plan. There has to be an institution that is willing to accept responsibility for it, and so forth. So the short answer is, they can be brought up, but not without extremely good cause and good funding and a good, really cultural case for why we should bring that, to, you know, out of the water.
That ship up in Marinette is a really good example. I was lucky enough to tour it when I was younger, and to have it disappear, I mean, it was just a heartbreak. So it's nice that we do have these ways of keeping these artifacts safe. We're talking today with Brendan Bayland, president of the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association, and Kevin Cullen, executive director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. Do you have any questions about either one of these organizations or shipwrecks in general? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show, and I'm Jill Nadeau. Hope you can join us again tomorrow. We're going to be getting ready for Valentine's Day, talking about chocolate, jewelry, and flowers. And that, of course, starts at 11. Right now, we are talking about shipwrecks and a really cool festival that's coming up in Manitowoc at the end of the month. It's the Ghost Ships Festival. And I believe you've got Tamara Thompson talking. She's the maritime archaeologist with Wisconsin and Historical Society. What are you going to be talking about, Kevin?
Well, as our state underwater archaeology program is, I think, one of the leading programs, I would say, of any state in the country, with the most shipwrecks nominated to the National Register of Historic Places. And the bulk of those, over 80 now, have been really under the leadership and research from Tamara, from Tammy Thompson. Really, it's this. Her talk is focused on newly discovered shipwrecks just last year. Every year, it seems like there's more and more being discovered, and that's through organizations like WUAA. Brendan and I were part of one recently, and you know, so seeing how organizations like ours work with the Wisconsin Historical Society to come in and then do the professional underwater archaeological survey work. Is really this wonderful partnership. And Tamara's research, and with their team down there, Kendra Kennedy and even their volunteer groups, working together, Zach Wittrock, to bring in new technology like photogrammetry, where you can then map a shipwreck within one dive using thousands of photographs. And it's that data that makes it publicly accessible and have a quick turnaround to have a something to present on, like at Ghost Ships Festival, is just really exciting. So I don't know, 1 hour is probably not enough time for Tammy to go through all the wrecks that they worked on last year, but it really will provide, I think, the casual viewer or interested in this, or may have seen a headline, just to understand the tremendous work that goes into documenting and preserving these shipwrecks.
Now, Brendan, you found one of those shipwrecks, am I right? A tugboat?
Well, in the past 3 years, I've found three significant shipwrecks.
Sorry, I didn't give you as much credit.
Well, they've all made a pretty big splash. The Trinidad we found last year was a perfectly intact two-masted schooner in 260 feet of water. And it was really rather dramatic because the deckhouse was still on it. It still had the dishes stacked in the cupboards inside the cabin from 1881. And it had a tremendous story associated with it. The captain, the builder, the whole story was really quite dramatic. So we immediately brought the state in, and they surveyed the wreck, and it's already on the National Register of Historic Places. We'll be giving 3D virtual reality tours of it at the festival. But then this spring, we found with Kevin the schooner Margaret A. Muir off of Algoma. It was a salt carrying two-masted schooner of about 140 feet length. It broke up in a huge storm just off of Algoma, trying to make the harbor. The only casualty, unfortunately, was the captain's dog. They had to row to shore in about 15-foot waves in a small open boat, barely survived. That ship has been sitting right off the harbor in 50-some feet of water since 1892. Thousands of boats go over it every year, salmon fishing, and nobody ever noticed it. We did historical research on the loss to locate exactly where we thought it was, and then using a side-scanning sonar, that is a very high-resolution archaeological mapping sonar, we located its remains, which are all there. It's just disarticulated and opened up. So a very important site for maritime archaeology because it shows exactly how these vessels were built. And then, of course, we found then this fall the John Evanson, a little 50-foot wooden tugboat, a steam tug that was actually a small reward for her discovery because the local dive clubs had been trying to find her. And again, we went to the historical record, to primary sources. We found some official wreck reports at the National Archives. And then we were able to use our remote sensing technology, our high-resolution archaeological sonar, to just cover the bottom in the grid where we knew she probably was. And I think it took us 5 minutes. We ran her over pretty quickly. We had all sorts of food and, supplies for the whole weekend. And then we didn't know what to do. We found her immediately.
I'll bet you managed to find something to do.
We did.
So, Kevin, how has all of this equipment and all of this new technology changed the way that people looking for shipwrecks do their job?
Yeah, so really it began, you could think about really the era of shipwreck discovery in the Great Lakes, going back to really the 1960s. A lot of this was equipment that was used really post-World War II, very rudimentary radar systems, in fact, that people like Kent Bell Richard, who's still around in Milwaukee, found some very famous shipwrecks, the Ralph Simmons Christmas tree ship, the SS Milwaukee, which I believe is going to be one of the topics at Ghost Ships Festival. But that was very rudimentary. It was even paper readouts. You would see a kind of a blip almost, on the paper readout of where there would be potentially an anomaly that could be a shipwreck or not. So it took trained eyes. But since, within the last 10 years, you could say, the technology has really advanced to the point of sonars, like side scan sonar, which again has been around a while, but the resolution has gotten so much better. And I would say even the cost has come down enough that organizations like Wisconsin Underwater Archaeological Association can afford even modify these sonar units without having to get a massive grant to be able to do the survey work. So within a day or so, as Brendan was saying, with good research, with the right technology, and a bit of time, you can actually now discover new shipwrecks that we thought weren't possible years before. So, that coupled with photogrammetry, again, with processor capabilities in the computers, now the rendering of these shipwreck sites are almost instantaneous. So in his, early times, even just as I was learning underwater archaeology, it was all about mapping. And we still do that using measuring tapes and slates and going down with Mylar underwater writing paper and a pencil. And, we still do that, but we don't have to map an entire shipwreck that way as much anymore. We can use it to do precise measurements to get, room and space of the frame, so we understand, okay, this is probably this vessel. So it's almost like ground truthing it. So, you know, from, again, modern technology to using old school methods, to this day, we're getting just a huge glimpse as to what the kind of vessels plied the waters and exactly what they are in much more definite detail.
Brendan, you had mentioned about the research before you went out. Obviously, all of the time went into that. Where do you go to find out about where these ships possibly could have sunk?
So around 25 years ago, I started to develop a personal database of every ship that was lost in Wisconsin waters. And I did it by, at that time, going to the Milwaukee Public Library and pulling the news microfilms. But as time passed, you know, they started to be digitized and put online. But I kept collecting new wreck accounts, total losses to commercial vessels in Wisconsin waters. Eventually, the database grew to, you know, about 2,000. And then I started to isolate those that I thought were good candidates for discovery. Something many people may not be aware of is the vast majority of the vessels lost in Wisconsin waters were blown onto beaches or onto reefs. And so they're not what we would call a findable shipwreck. These are shipwrecks that in many cases do have extant remains buried under a beach, but you're not going to find it. You're not going to scuba dive it. So I isolated only those vessels that went down out in the lake and that hadn't been found yet. And then I identified 225 of them. There are 225 ships still missing. I shouldn't say just in Wisconsin. This is in Lake Michigan. There are 225 vessels that haven't been found yet. And I identified the top 10 that I thought were findable. Now, there are a lot of big ships that would be really cool to find out there, but they're, you know, in huge search grids. Like, we don't know exactly where they went down. So it's going to take a month of Sundays to find them and a boat that gets, you know, gallons to the mile, not miles to the gallon. So money. So I looked at the wrecks that I thought were findable. And those are the ones that we went after. And they were findable. And we're still going after them. We go to do original research. A lot of it can be done online now. There are a lot of online databases. You have to know where they are. Wisconsin Maritime Museum hosts one of the best, the Metzler database, where you can research literally every vessel that sailed the lakes in the 1800s is in that database. With its dimensions from its enrollment documents from the National Archives. But we also do some original research. I'll go to the National Archives office in Chicago. I'll pull court case documents. I'll pull wreck reports. I'll do a genealogy, full genealogy on the captain and on the builder and on survivors. And I'll locate surviving family members, surviving descendants, and see if there's any family oral tradition about it. And that's always fascinating because in many instances, they didn't know their ancestor was on a shipwreck on the Great Lakes, you know? So that's always a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I can't. This has been a passion for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. Since I was a young man.
Where did it come from?
Well, I grew up on Lake Superior up in the copper country of Michigan, the Keweenaw Peninsula. And we had a couple of old schooners, hulks, just off the house. And I used to snorkel them and clean the fishing lures off and sell them in town for a buck a piece. And when I got to be a teenager, I started wondering, what were these two wooden ships doing in the lake off our house? What stories did they have to tell? How'd they end up here? Who sailed on these? Nobody knew. I'd asked everybody. Nobody knows. Just the old hulks. And so I went to the local newspaper microfilms there and researched them. And it turned out they were some of the most historic vessels on Lake Superior. And they had been abandoned there after wrecking. And I wrote up their history and published it in the local paper when I was, I think, 17. And I got hooked. There were just so many wrecks up there. So much cool stuff on the bottom of the area, of the waterway there, because it was an old copper mining area. It was like an underwater museum. And turns out, many harbors on the Great Lakes are like that. There's just so much undiscovered stuff. You know, and so I got a side scanning sonar and started to map, you know, old river bottoms, old lakes, and just the amazing amount of stuff and untold stories that are there was overwhelming. And I made it a lifelong passion.
What about you, Kevin? How did you get started in this?
Probably the smell of the Irish Sea when I was a child.
I thought I detected a little bit of Irish in your accent.
Yeah, once upon a time. My mother's from Wisconsin, which is why we came here, but we didn't come on a boat as many of the immigrants did back in the 1850s, certainly to the Great Lakes. But yeah, no, it really did. I think it really began in the coastal waters of Ireland on the River Shannon, you know, when I lived there in County Galway. But coming to Wisconsin, though, really was actually when, you know, I started enrolling in university at Wisconsin-Madison and anthropology and studying archaeology and realized the Great Lakes and its maritime heritage, which is so vast. I spent time in South Asia and India and also realized this global maritime community. So I actually got scuba certified at Hoofers in Madison there. And that's when we started going out to dive on shipwrecks in Lake Michigan. And then I realized this is an amazing collection, as Brendan said, underwater museums in and of themselves. And that Great Lakes freshwater preservation is just unparalleled, really, in many parts of the world. And this shipwreck century, really, between, you could say, 1830s and 1930s is what keeps us kind of this motivation of going after to find new discoveries, because they're just still, you know, only scratching the surface of what's actually been found. So that interest has been, you know, through the parallel path through the museum community from my professional archaeology career to now being able to dovetail that with curation and exhibits and now storytelling at our museum here at the Wisconsin Maritime Museum.
That's wonderful. Dream come true for both of you. Brendan, you had mentioned that you grew up in Lake Superior, and of course, one of the, if not the most famous shipwrecks is the Edmund Fitzgerald, which, you know, sank 50 years ago in November. What are you doing at the festival to commemorate that?
Well, we've got a couple of speakers that were very involved in documenting the Edmund Fitzgerald's history. Fred Stonehouse, like I mentioned, will be there. And Rick Mixter, who has written extensively about the Edmund Fitzgerald and has actually been down on her on a number of occasions back when that was still going on with submarines, will be giving a talk about all the different investigations that were done on the Edmund Fitzgerald over the years. So really, two really well-known scholars. Plus, we'll be having some commemorative knickknacks that we'll be selling for those who want to pick up a commemorative 50th anniversary etched crystal tumbler. we're a 501c3, so all of the anything you spend there goes to further our scientific and educational nonprofit. But yeah, the Edmund Fitzgerald has always had a real draw. I remember the storm well. I was 8 years old, and the waves that were coming in over our pier were the biggest I'd ever seen in my life. And I had nightmares for years after that. These huge waves were coming up at the house because they were literally probably 15, 20 foot waves. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, me either. I was actually in high school and hearing about what had happened. I was in the UP too. It just was so remarkable. It's kind of like, where were you when Kennedy was shot? It was like, where were you when the Edmund Fitzgerald went down? Why do you think it has such a draw for people who, unlike us, were not there? We're not there. Kevin, I'm sure you hear about it a lot at the museum.
Yeah, we do. It's actually one of the most common things. Like, what about... Where's the history of the Edmund Fitzgerald? You know, and why I would say is, well, certainly this, you know, the song has a lot to do with it. The fact that it's also very much, you know, in living memory, as you both just explained, in 1975, there's, you know, it's a living history. And it's the largest and the last real Great Lakes shipwreck that we can really point to. While there's been some small recreational boating, you know, fatalities and disasters, this one rises to that occasion of just, you know, the ferocity of the Great Lakes and its, you know, its tremendous impact in the maritime community in which these vessels are coming from port to port. And of course, it has a very strong Wisconsin connection historically to Edmund Fitzgerald and, of course, then the Northwestern Mutual Foundation and, you know, all of the families that are affected and its their connections to various communities in Wisconsin. So, you know, I think it's just also the discovery itself being, you know, in such deep water, Lake Superior, off of the Canadian coast, in Canadian water. But, you know, that also coupled with, you know, modern scuba equipment, it was the Newt suit that was used to go down these, you know, in the 1970s to really understand what the wreck site is like. And when you see it on the bottom, we have an actual model in our model boats gallery of what it looks like, kind of like Titanic, right, where it's flipped over and the iron ore is laid out and it's broken in half. And it is, you know, just this really shows how violent that wreck event was, and yet still that it's a tomb site to this day. You know, it's a graveyard. So that I think is what I think people's fascinating interest is, and certainly the lore surrounding it too of actually how that happened is still an open discussion.
Yes, definitely a mystery. And speaking of, you know, you said it was in deep water, but some ships are in pretty shallow water. Why don't you talk about the Griffin? It's kind of been the holy grail for a while, Brendan. There's just a controversy. Give us some background on that one.
Sure. Oddly enough, I've done a lot of original research into the French period on Lake Michigan, and specifically the LaSalle expeditions. The Griffin was the first decked vessel on the Western Great Lakes. She was not the first vessel, nor was she the first shipwreck. LaSalle had another vessel, the Frontenac, which wrecked on Lake Ontario the year before. So the Griffin was a fur trading vessel that predated any other decked vessel on the Great Lakes by about 80 years. So a real one-off. This was a vessel that was probably about 45 feet in length. We actually have LaSalle's original letters in his own hand from the French archives, where he discusses the ship and he discusses its loss. So there's not a lot of mystery about the area of the lake it went missing in. It sailed through the Straits of Mackinac, had stopped at St. Ignace, and then continued on to what we believe to have been Rock Island off the tip of the Door Peninsula. Excellent archaeological study by Ron Mason, a prominent early Wisconsin archaeologist, actually found French graves there that had, you know, 1670s period material in them. So we really do believe that's where the Griffin landed. She left after a few days. Her captain sailed her back. LaSalle and his men got off and continued down the Wisconsin coast. And as LaSalle was crossing Death's Door, an amazingly violent storm hit, almost capsizing the canoes. That was the next day. That same storm is believed to have been the storm that sank the Griffin. By all accounts, LaSalle had sent his men to circumnavigate Lake Michigan and to get news of it. And they had their men had been told by a local native settlement of Potawatomis on the North Shore that they had seen the ship come to anchor in a bay behind a point of land where they were sheltered. And they had warned them not to go out in the storm, but the captain said his ship was not afraid of the wind and he would do as he pleased. And so he sailed out. The second they got out of the lee of the land, they lost steerage. They had to strike all but one of their sails, and then they disappeared, literally vanished in front of the eyes of the Potawatomi. The only thing that was ever found was some debris that washed up on the north shore of Lake Michigan. It was the truck of the flagstaff of the vessel, the cabin doors, a hatch combing, and some bales of beaver pelts. And LaSalle was shown these. But the vessel was never found. What we believe today, based upon these accounts, is that the Griffin probably did capsize and sink somewhere in northern Lake Michigan. That area is not deep. It's only between about 30 and 80 feet deep. And we think, from what we've seen of other historic wrecks in that area, that it is a debris field. There'll be almost no wood left. And so we expect that it's going to have to be found with a magnetometer. They'll find it because it was carrying anvils, big anvils, to, you know, craft another vessel that was supposed to go down the Mississippi. It has big iron anchors. It had a lot of iron tools. So somebody someday is going to find a big debris field of late 1600s era ironwork on the floor of Lake Michigan in the north end. But I'm not going to hold my breath because that's a needle in a haystack.
Now, what about the couple from Charlevoix that thinks that they found it? What are your thoughts on that? And Kevin?
Well, it seems like there's always a new discovery. and Brendan can probably point to a number of expeditions he's even been on that have claimed it. You know, again, I would say, show me the evidence. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of, you know, oh, I found this just for headlines kind of stories. But as Brendan said, really, the artifacts will at the end of the day, truly speak to that. So a cannon as well, I believe, right, Brendan? There was a couple of number of cannons. So that narrows the scope of your wreck pretty significantly. But yeah, I can't speak to that specific you know.
I'll bet you can, Brandon.
Well, I know them.
Okay.
But, well, I've had them on my podcast, and an excellent researcher. They have solid research. I think where it falls apart is that this isn't the first time they've found a wooden object and said it was the griffin. It also hasn't been substantiated. They tend to bring in experts from France as opposed to experts from the Great Lakes who know what things look like here. I would say that what Kevin said is correct, that they failed to produce the sort of smoking gun evidence that we would expect to see. And also, they're in the right neck of the woods, though. And I do have a lot of respect for their research as historians, but the archaeology is where things kind of fall apart on that one.
We're talking about shipwrecks with Kevin Cullen, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc, and Brendan Bailid, the President of the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeological Association. Give us a call at 800-642-123 or send an email to talk@WPR. We'd love to hear your questions and comments. And this is a Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nagel. We're talking about shipwrecks. Hope you can join us again tomorrow. We're going to be talking about getting ready for Valentine's Day. So we're talking to a chocolatier, a couple of jewelers, and a florist. So hope you can join us for that. You talk about the protections that are out there for these shipwrecks and that now they are protected, but who actually protects them? I mean, it's out in the middle of the lake. So who's going to stop people from looting them?
I'll take a stab at that. So the job of protecting shipwrecks is really the Wisconsin DNR, game wardens. It also falls upon really any law enforcement officer, but specifically the DNR is the group that's charged with protecting these, same as with any terrestrial archaeological site that is on public land. That's also the DNR's purview. There are processes before there's, for example, construction done on riverways or on lakeshores. There generally is an archaeological study, and they bring in the State Historical Society's maritime archaeologist to make sure that they're not disturbing any important archaeological remains. The same is done when they build a freeway or a road. It's important to remember that most of our shipwrecks are not out there on the bottom of the lake. They're under beaches, they're in harbors, and in rivers. So that kind of due diligence is important.
We've got a call from Dot in Manitowoc. Go ahead, Dot.
Hello. I was wondering, of all the Great Lakes, which one is the most violent and which one has accumulated the most shipwrecks?
Okay. Which one of you gentlemen knows the answer? I feel like I'm in jeopardy.
Go ahead, Brendan.
I've done some original research on that over the years. So, statistically speaking, the most dangerous of the Great Lakes is Lake Michigan. And this is strictly a function of vessel density and population. Lake Superior has the least. And that's, again, there are no major cities up there. It was cut off from the other lakes until the Sioux Locks were built in 1855. And most of the vessel traffic was in the form of large bulk carriers carrying, you know, coarse freight goods like iron ore and lumber. Lake Michigan had a lot of smaller coastal trading schooners that ran between places like Chicago and, you know, the Eastern Lakes, a lot of grain schooners, and that had a lot of open, unprotected expanses. So if there's a big, and it's also very narrow east to west. So on the ocean, if you get in a storm, you know, you can run before the storm with the wind at your back for days and let it blow itself out. If you try that on Lake Michigan, you'll be in someone's cornfield in 2 hours. So most of the ships were blown ashore, either on the East Coast or the West Coast. But Lake Michigan edges out Lake Erie by a slight bit, and that's because Lake Erie is fairly shallow. A lot of ships sank, but because their masts were breaking the surface, these schooners were pumped out and refloated because Lake Erie is 55, 60 feet deep. Lake Huron, likewise, doesn't have a lot of big cities, so most of the ships there were coming from someplace else and going to someplace else. So Lake Michigan does have a narrow lead. Now, in terms of treachery, I would say it's a toss-up between Lakes Michigan and Erie. Lake Superior can get very rough, but not as rough as Lake Michigan and Lake Erie. They are, generally speaking, just treacherous lakes because of their morphology, because of the number of reefs, the lack of open expanses where you can run, like Lake Superior has. They were dreaded by mariners in storm conditions, and particularly Lake Michigan, because it's just, there's nowhere to hide, you know, and nowhere to run.
Let's take another call from Richard in Two Rivers. Go ahead, Richard.
Hi. Hey, I just learned of the Wisconsin, Maritime Historical Society this summer when I noticed some type of object poking out of the sand up in the Two Rivers area, and it turns out it was some type of post they assume was used to rescue boats that were sinking in the sand. They felt it was maybe from a salvage company that tried to pull the boats out, and that many boats just did that. They sunk in the sand right off of the shore out there in Two Rivers. And it was very interesting learning the historical, take on what I found poking out of the sand.
Thanks, Richard. Any comments, guys?
Yeah, I guess I could jump in there because, you know, we get these questions a lot from the community. And certainly, as you've mentioned there, Two Rivers, is Raleigh Point is a well-known bump out into the lake, and it's quite shallow, quite a ways out. And there's a number of shipwrecks right off the shore there. And so that's part of the National Marine Sanctuary's Wisconsin Shipwreck Coast for that reason. And so really what we try to do is steer people to identify those. So the caller was absolutely correct in, you know, raising an eyebrow and maybe, oh, this looks not natural. Could it be part of another one of those shipwrecks? And, you know, not often they are wrecks, but they are associated with the maritime cultural landscape. And that could be also a pier. It could be related to commercial fishing. It could be World War II when they landed Sherman tanks there on those landing craft tanks when they were doing amphibious invasion training. So there's all of this part of, you know, the coast and the shoreline speaks to a particular period. And you might just be lucky enough to actually have come across something that is, in fact, part of a historic schooner. And it's important for us to document those. And so what we do is send callers or people interested or curious to the Wisconsin Historical Society and the state archaeologist office, and they can then manage the process with the DNR to make sure that they're recorded accurately. And WUA, Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association, could come in and help map a project that maybe could become a citizen science public maritime archaeology project and survey. And that we've been doing for over 30 years, since 1990.
Great. Thanks for that call, Richard. I appreciate it. You know, talking about citizen science, Brendan, your organization, the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association, does some things like that. So why don't you tell us a little bit how people who are maybe are not scuba divers can get involved in your organization?
Sure. The best way to get involved with us and to learn more about us is to go to our website, WUAA.org. And, you know, read about some of the projects we've done. We send out a monthly member update about all the projects that we have coming up and all the trainings we have coming up for people. And depending upon where you are, your level of interest, we almost always have something for everybody. Some people want to be involved just by doing research projects. We have a couple of projects where we're transcribing vessel wreck reports from the National Archives to be able to put in an online database. We have projects where we're transcribing early vessel accident lists, you know, to compile data. But some of our bigger projects are remote sensing projects. We have, for example, one that we have planned is at Two Rivers Point, where there is an old schooner, a bunch of old schooner frames that are in the surf line right off of the Raleigh Point Lighthouse. And they're buried deeply under the beach. One of the things we want to do is bring in a magnetometer, which is a device that measures, that can detect iron deep under the sand by using the Earth's magnetic field. Instead of like a metal detector that'll only go a foot deep, this will detect iron bodies, you know, 10 feet under the sand. What we want to do is put, you know, flags in the beach wherever we get a hit, and then we run a piece of string around the outline, and we can see exactly how big this piece of ship is, and we measure it, and it can tell us a lot about what ship it is. There's also a big piece of it, we think, out under the bottom of the lake, about maybe 50 yards out, We want to map that as well using the magnetometer dropping floats. And we'll also measure that. So we'll get to have a good idea of what's under the bottom. And that's a good public participation project. You know, we'll bring a barbecue grill. We'll bring, you know, have a picnic and put up a tent and have a good fun time. We have other projects similar. We're going out to look for a new shipwreck this spring. We're going to probably rent a fairly large boat and bring a pretty good number of people out there. We'll show that they'll be able to go shipwreck hunting with us. And we'll use our side scan sonar to map this piece of bottom. And we believe we will find the ship we're looking for. And so, you know, our members who I think we've pretty much filled that one, but with many projects like that, we try to do at least two projects a year where we get a significant number of people that can participate. And then we also train people to use our side scan sonar and to use our remote operated vehicle. And if you have a project and you want to use those, you have to have a docent who will be along to maintain the equipment, but you can actually use our equipment. If you're a member and you propose a project and you have a good project design, we'll make it a WUA project and go and look for whatever you want to look for.
What great opportunities. Kevin, what about you? How do volunteers help you at the museum?
Well, we're always looking for volunteers. Any museum is, you know, but really for us, it's, you know, a variety of things. Helping on the submarine, of course, you know, that's its own history and important preservation project. But within collections, we have a number of volunteers that help weekly come in and help with archives, documenting new donations within the exhibit galleries too, as a docent, but ways that, you know, educate the public that want to, you know, learn more about the maritime heritage of Wisconsin. I mean, that's our mission, connecting all people to Wisconsin's waterways. And various folks have different ways that they identify with that. And if it's, again, commercial fishing, which you have a new exhibit about currently, that's one avenue. Or if it is those beachcombers that are looking for things and they want to learn a bit more about what was the ghost port that used to be there. You know, really, that's what our organization set up for. And with WUIA, similarly, you know, because when we find these shipwreck sites, they are become these landmarks off of these communities that they can now connect with and understand a bit more about that community's role in the peopling of the Great Lakes. And that's, you know, a story that's always changing, and we're excited to kind of help articulate a chapter or two in that complicated history.
Okay. Well, we've only got a few minutes left. Brendan, why don't you give us the rundown on that festival again and where we can get tickets and how much are they and et cetera.
Sure. If you want to join us at the Ghost Ships Festival in Manitowoc, it's going to be Friday, February 28th and Saturday, March 1st at the Inn on Maritime Bay. That's right across the parking lot from the Wisconsin Maritime Museum. So if you join us, you can visit the museum and you'll get a $10 discount on your admission to the museum. If you want to buy tickets, they're $25 if you want to go Saturday. The Friday night show, which is shorter, it starts at 6 o'clock and runs until about 8, is free. It's being sponsored by our partner, the Wisconsin Shipwreck Coast National Marine Sanctuary. If you want to buy tickets, they're $25 a piece. You can go to www.ghostshipsfestival.com. That is where you will find tickets. We still have some booths available for vendors. They're going fast if you want to sign up for a booth. And we also have sponsorship opportunities. It's probably a good idea to get your tickets sooner than later, because we do think we could fill up this year.
I have a feeling after today, you probably will get really close. We have a lot of shipwreck lovers that like to listen to the show. So I want to thank you both for what you do for the history of the state and for coming on today and sharing your knowledge with us. I hope we'll have you on again.
Thank you, Jill. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us. Kevin Cullen is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc, and Brendan Bayland is President of the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association. I want to thank you for listening. This and all our other shows, of course, are a team effort. She'd not been 2 weeks from
The captain called all hands and swore he'd take that whale in tow. Soon may the wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Da 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 da. A drunken sailor, what will we do with a drunken sailor? What will we do with a drunken sailor?